This week, I spent some time praying with art that depicts today's gospel story, called The Healing of the Gerasene Demoniac. And there are centuries of images that tell the story of the naked, captive man who lives among the dead, rejected by his community, and how Jesus casts out his tormentors and restores him to health. Much of this art shows and focuses on the moment of healing. And so often the picture is the man's chained body jerks backwards and ugly winged creatures spew out of his mouth. One 6th century mosaic, though, shows the aftermath of the healing, with the man kneeling at Jesus' feet, his arms stretched out in gratitude, and Jesus extends a hand to him with a slight smile on his face. Rather than drama, there is a sense of peace and hope for the future. The core of the gospel story is Jesus' desire for the man's healing, because the man insists that the misery that he knows is preferable to the unimaginable freedom that Jesus offers. That's the core, Jesus' desire for healing. But that's not the whole story. There is more happening within this broader community of guards and swineherds and townspeople, some of whom witness the healing firsthand and others who just hear about it secondhand. These are the people who have lived alongside the tormented man for years, the ones who secure his chains, who pay his captors, and who watch from the hillside as he suffers alone. You might think that at least one person would rejoice that the man was made whole. But no. We're told all the people of the surrounding country are angry and afraid, and they insist that Jesus leave town. It seems the healing is not good news for them. I get the loss of the livestock, but what is it beyond that that threatens the community system? Maybe the healed man was their scapegoat, the one who carried the demons of the entire community. And if so, what happens when that scapegoat is gone, when they can no longer feel superior to him, and when the demons are out in public looking for a new place to roost? What happens then? Happy Juneteenth. Today is the first time Juneteenth is a national holiday, commemorating the end of slavery of the Civil War, after the Civil War. And it's not a Jubilee Day, of course. It's been celebrated for over a century and a half in the Black American community. And it remembers the arrival of Union soldiers into Galveston, Texas, on June 19, 1865, with an executive order from President Lincoln stating, "All slaves are free." This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves. And the connection theretofore existing between them now becomes that of employer and hired laborer. Texas was the most western, remote reach of American slavery. So freedom there was a powerful symbol of liberation and new beginning for all formerly enslaved people. And when you read the oral histories of that day, the surge of joy and the hope for the future is palpable, a real cause for celebration that is now a tradition for many Black families to gather, to pass down history and culture, and to reflect on where the community has come from and where it strives to go. It is a holy thing to celebrate Juneteenth as one nation, for people of all races and ethnicities to give thanks for Liberation Day. But that's not the whole story. Juneteenth was a bittersweet celebration in 1865, and it's a bittersweet celebration today. The Emancipation Proclamation, remember, was issued in 1863, January 1863. So the enslaved people in Texas has actually been free for 2.5 years. But that had not been communicated widely, and there was no one to enforce it. Sure, the mail system was slow, but the fuller truth is that those who did know had an interest in keeping the 250,000 souls in bondage in Texas. Their interest was economic, political, and you add to that ingrained racism, and you have the foundations of white supremacy. So they waited until they were forced to acknowledge the inherent dignity and freedom of people eternally and equally beloved by God. The history of freedom from slavery in the U.S. is hard won and complicated and incremental. And it running alongside it is the evolutionary history of white. But you might not know that it only applied to states that had seceded, not to loyal Union states. So enslaved people in Maryland and Delaware and Kentucky and Missouri remained enslaved. And most had to wait 3 years for the ratification. Then, the 13th Amendment allowed slavery or involuntary servitude for those in prison. So it wasn't long until black codes and other laws restricted black people's rights to own property and businesses and to travel freely. A vast array of vagrancy laws were passed that turned out-of-work men into convicts. After the Great Depression, the Federal Housing Authority developed programs to increase home ownership and to boost employment. But its algorithm to assess property values penalized communities where black people lived. Redlining was born. And still, and now, voter suppression laws, racial profiling and policing, unequal access to quality public education and healthcare, there remain so many barriers to true flourishing for people of color in this country. In a forum last week with Canon Stephanie Spellers, Dr. Catherine Meeks of the Absalom Jones Center in Atlanta said, "Juneteenth is a paradox. I'm glad it's a national holiday so that people can think and learn. But it's melancholy too. We have so far to go to get where people are truly free." And Canon Spellers added, "A holiday on its own won't change anything. It's easy to declare a holiday, but it's hard to live in it. Does the U.S. really want to step into liberation?" she asked. "Do we?" I'm still wondering about today's gospel story. God's desire for abundant life and liberation for all people shines through in Jesus' healing of the man, healing of his bonds and of the demons. And that certainty has been a source of strength and hope to Black Americans for centuries. And here's another thing I noticed in the 6th-century mosaic. Like most Western European religious art, Jesus, the healed man, and the disciple standing by are all light-skinned with Western facial features. Now, often that's jarring, because that's not what Jesus and his disciples looked like. But today, When I look at the man in chains, possessed by a legion of demons, whose return to peace and dignity is a threat to others, I see a man who is carrying all the prejudices and systems of white domination on behalf of his community. He can't imagine what another way of life looks like. So he says to Jesus, "What do you want with me? I can't be helped." But Jesus looks at the tormented man and he sees a beloved child of God. So he heals him and he sends him back into his community as a living proclamation of what is possible when God is invited in to exercise wrongs. Canon Spellers is right. It is easy to declare a holiday and very hard to live into it. It's not about individual niceness. It's about changing the system. And for that to happen, individuals, this community, this church as a whole must see Black, Indigenous, and people of color as God does, human, whole, and beloved. Hear and tell the whole story of race and white supremacy in our church, because it's there, and in our country. Critically assess our own stories of privilege and race and class, the things done and left undone in the liberation of others. And use whatever power and privilege we have to repair what has been broken and to clear space at the table so that others have a place to sit down. It is hard work, but not impossible with God, who has already shown us how a life of service and sacrifice and death and resurrection can be lived. May we be faithful to it. Amen.